Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Adam Melia, Rob Gutman and Carl Kopak. The first match of the 2020-2021 season was Liverpool FC 4, Leeds United 3. And Rob Gutman, it was a classic, and I know you will have done. When you watch it back, you go, yeah. Oh, it wasn't quite as fraught as it felt at the time. Is that fair?
Absolutely, and I did. Yeah, there's a phase at 3-2. I'm losing track of where the span between the goals, but there's quite a span between our third and their equaliser, isn't there? Yeah.
We're brilliant from 45 to 65.
That's right. So it got very pre-season-y. I was watching with Steve Graves, and I said, this could end up being like the Blackpool game a week ago. You know, it felt like we'd had the silly bit, and now we can just pull away from them. But some of our football in that phase you just referenced was very exhibition-y. And there was a sense that it was a bit complacent within that. You saw them.
Are you citing the where we go through with Salah and Mane, for instance, on that counter attack, and they're two against one, and somehow they conspire to not even get a meaningful shot off?
Yeah, like they play 3-1-2s between them. It's joyous. There's also one where Bobby Firmino gets a shot away, but he takes it on his right, on the outside of his right. He's been beautifully put in by a move. And you think it's a very simple finish on his left, really. And it just felt like he wanted to score the right goal rather than the goal. And I think there was a bit of a vibe of that. There's something very, I don't want to be simplistic about it, so something very FIFA about the kind of goals they wanted to score. I think they wanted to let cut loose. The most irrepressible I've seen the front three for a long time was actually the last game of last season when they were all in the second half. Do you remember that half hour?
Against Newcastle, yeah.
They were just sensational for a phase. And they were again. They really were again, despite all having had mixed pre-seasons, especially Mohamed Salah, obviously. But they were all fantastic. But it was almost like they were doing sort of like a highlights reel ready for a video about how good they are, rather than winning the football match. That's really harsh about players playing at the peak of their powers. But I think you know what I mean.
I do sort of know what you mean. One of the things about the game, Carl, is you watched it and you're watching in your emotions. First game of the season, they're coming in as champions. It's against Leeds United, who we all roundly know are amongst the worst possible football clubs. And so you end up in this situation where, you know, you really do not want to see, you become very, very fearful as it wears on. And I think that that's one of the problems really within it. Whereas when you watch it back or when you sort of take stock, the first goal's dreadful, and we'll get on to talk about the three that we concede and how the first is actually the most concerning in general. But I think that when you actually calm it down, you're a bit like, well, they did just only really have three shots on target. All three of them whistle in for one reason or another, and we'll come on to talk about the goalkeeper. But all of that said, they find themselves in a situation where at times I thought it was great, and also it was absolutely energising.
Yeah, well, first I should say I love your Leeds agenda. That inspires me every day. I love that. Yeah, it's a strange thing because, you know, if you didn't see the game and saw the scoreline, you think that was closer than it should be, and which of course it was. But for me, the big thing about that was I never felt threatened, which is mad. When, you know, you can see three goals at Anfield and they're all pretty silly goals, really. I mean, the third one's a good finish, obviously, but it was inspiring because I love the fact that Jurgen Klopp seems to have this thing about first game of the season. We must be absolutely nuts. Like the Arsenal 4-3, the Watford 3-3, which was insane, West Ham 4-0. And he seems to start off with a sort of, well, rather the team just sort of tend to start off with just a huge level of, let's just run at everything as fast as we can and pretend that, you know, the season is the next 90 minutes. And It was a nice feeling, but the big thing again was, I mean, I was at that Watford game, it was the sense that, oh my God, if we draw, it's the end of the world. And I still had that feeling on Saturday, but this time I also had a feeling of, well, but it's not going to finish 3-3. I know that's not going to happen because they're easily the better team. I mean, as much as you want to give Leeds credit, they're, which you know you're loath to do, but it's easily the better team. And I always talk about what Jurgen Klopp says about, you know, the boys sorted it out. They worked it out between them what to do. And obviously the penalty helped. But yeah, it was far more enjoyable than a 4-3 should be, really.
And certainly with the nature of how the goals go in, Adam, it was far more enjoyable than that as well. I mean, I liked the Anfield Rap tweet around the fact that we just needed to hold serve once in order to do the decent thing. But I actually felt that about the game. As Rob says before, I think if Liverpool go 4-2, I think Liverpool win 6-2.
Yeah.
And I think you can drive yourself mad with that stuff sometimes. But if in that period from 45 to 65, Liverpool had gone 4-2, I think they would have absolutely pulled away from Leeds. They would have been architects of their own downfall had they dropped points, but they would simultaneously have been hard done to.
Yeah, I was expecting it to go 4-2. But having said that, I wasn't expecting us to concede a second either. And I think that the possession stats that kept popping up just didn't seem to ring true to me. No. You know, Leeds having more possession, it just didn't seem correct. And I don't know why that is. But so when it does go 3-3, I think, as Rob said before, it has a certain sense of the kind of the Blackpool and the pre-season about it. Because I was saying before the match, I wouldn't be surprised if Leeds raced into a 2-0 lead as Blackpool had, and they didn't. But there was definitely something there which
an air of that.
There was an air of that. And I didn't like the fact that the air of that continued to the stage where it was 3-3. I think I'm a vibes man, Neil, and I like feeling the vibes of each season. I'm not sure I like the vibes of this season at the minute, but it obviously depends on how the team reacts from this. But so, like, last season before last, I very much enjoyed the fact that we conceded none or one. I like that kind of thing. I was thinking, and thinking to the season before that one, I did enjoy it when each of the front three would score every week. However, it's nice that we concede none or one now.
Yeah.
Mm. And so that, you know, the season where we go on to win the European Cup and get however many points in the league, that was, you know, that was the one where I was feeling supremely confident about each game, just knowing that we don't concede. It just sets you up such a platform. And I felt like last season we kind of didn't have that anymore towards, for various reasons. I guess Alisson's couple of injuries didn't, you know, it meant that he seemed a bit interrupted throughout the season, still seems a bit interrupted somehow now. And so the vibes I'm getting in terms of how we're actually playing, and also like the signings we're looking to make, it seems like we are releasing an element of control and making our defence even kind of more exposed than they are already, which is very exposed. And I'm not sure, I don't know, it doesn't...
I want to go back to this because I think not dissimilar to me. I think that, for instance, for most of 2019, Liverpool do a lot of phase defending where they almost choose to defend for an extended period. The best example is the final against Spurs, where we go 1-0 up and we just effectively, we don't sit back in a conventional sort of just defend the edge of our 18-yard box sort of way, but we set up to be...
The coolness of the team compared to the, you know, the fans in that situation, yeah. That's why it's the best example.
And that's in a number of different ways. This Liverpool side hasn't now done that sort of phase defending for ages. So even in those games, Tottenham get a couple of chances later on in that final. There's late chances for Mason Mount when we go to Chelsea, for Zaha at Crystal Palace. It's not like there aren't chances for opposition players, but what there aren't is they tend to firstly, they do come and they are often really, really good ones, but they come quite late in the game, but also they come when Liverpool have been frustrating them for 30, 40 minutes. And I think what you're saying, and I've got a fair bit of sympathy with it, is I actually struggle to think of the last time we frustrated a side for 30 or 40 minutes, if you know what I mean, where we've done their heads in for 30 or 40 minutes without doing all that much going in the opposite direction. We've just done their heads in. They can't find a way through. And we seem to have stopped committing to that in quite the same way.
Absolutely. And I think you could probably see a similar thing with City. And that's why it concerns me a bit, because I think as much as anything, and it probably is something we're doing, there's a little bit of a mystique cracking in terms of how other teams feel they can do against us. I think other teams, when you're talking Zaha missing his late chance, that's because he feels like he needs to put it in the postage stamp. He knows he won't get another chance. All of that sort of thing. I'm not sure that's quite there at the moment. I think Leeds feel they can score three at Anfield, and partly that's why they do. You know, there isn't this kind of impenetrable somehow goalkeeper the way we saw. My example of that is always when we played Chelsea in a two-legged semi-final, and they had I can't remember his name now.
Oh, Courtois.
Courtois yeah. first season, and it just it felt like we couldn't score. And like I remember Gerrard trying to put it in the bottom corner with shots time and time again, and that was what we had there for with Alisson for a while. And so I do think that there is something which I'm not quite sure how you deal with it really, but there is I'm just a bit concerned now that teams like they did with City all of a sudden last season will think, well, we'll have a pop and this is what we'll do. We've seen other teams do it. Granted, that's the teams where we usually score four or five, but there is a blueprint developing on how to play against Liverpool. And if it works in the next month or so, that's going to be the story of the season. His team's going to keep trying doing it until they can see that it's not working. So I think we're in very early doors, a very interesting part of what the season's going to look like.
I think in hardcore numbers, Neil, our defending, I know we're going to go dissect these goals a bit because you can tell yourself two different stories, but the pulling back of the lens, as Adam's talking about, is we become a team that concedes goals. I actually decided to check the statistics on it, and the malaise goes back to, well, pre-lockdown, I would say probably West Ham at home, we concede two. And from that point onwards, we've conceded in 15 mainstream games, 15 big games. We conceded 26 in our last 15, which goes pre-lockdown, lockdown, and to now. That's a really, really shit goal average. I checked, I sort of averaged it out across the Premier League. So, well, where would we have finished if we'd had that goal average conceding last season? I knew it'd be shit. It would only two teams were worse than that in the entire last season. So, in a way, I think that it sort of helps Klopp and the gang go, it's pretty acute, this problem, isn't it? Rather than going, this will pass, this is a phase. There's something a bit more going on, I think, we have to concede. The interesting thing is, in that phase, if you look at the personnel of the back five, apart from the couple of games Alisson's missing, they're almost all there, the main guys. Yeah. The only variation, even if you go across the team, is Henderson's missing for a few games, but not that many. So here's my COD theory on it at the moment. I think Adam's alluded to it. Are the midfield lacking intensity now? And is this a structural thing because they've been doing what they've been doing for so long? I think you could see lots of elements of them lacking the intensity on the press. We will talk about it when we go discuss the goals, but that's my COD theory for now.
You got a COD theory, Carl? Any CODs there?
I'm surprised at that, to be honest. I mean,
the goals?
No, the numbers. Could you say that because the league was won, we were a bit slack, particularly the Chelsea home game?
You could use that excuse, and it might be a valid one, but probably
I'd rather we didn't carry it on.
I think there's loads. So my slight response to this is that there's lots and lots of mitigating circumstances. What I'm more concerned about, and I can do all the mitigating circumstances, for instance, you're counting the goals against Atletico Madrid where they get three in extra time. And that's three of your goals there. You're counting the City 4-0, which was about as sort of definitively freakish as it gets. Yeah. I think we can agree with that in a certain little way there. And we're also counting the mad Chelsea 3.
Yeah.
But my concern,
the feeling kind of goes back before.
But my concern is more the vibes.
Yeah, the vibes.
And I think the vibes are. I'm more concerned almost about the vibes than about almost even about a sort of doing a statistical reality, because what I think does matter is that veneer of don't even bother.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you don't want to lose. And what you don't want to lose is I think is really important is don't even bother. And right now, the thing about the Leeds game, and it'll take a while even to shake that one off, is there's a lot, you know, you look at who we've got next, Chelsea will bother. Then we've got Arsenal at home, and that we've drawn one and lost one of the last two against them. So Arsenal will definitely bother. Villa away, I think Villa will probably be quite bothered, and then Everton away as well. And Everton may well bother more than they have done for a while. So I think that's what I'm concerned about, Adam, is that we can go into a couple of the reality bits in a minute, and we will do with the first goal in particular. But I think what we did have was the idea that if you're going to try and score against this Liverpool side, then you'd best bring your dinner.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Neil. And I think that looking back, it's our incredible run at the start of last season, up to and, you know, including Sheffield United, where we kind of spawn it, and then, you know, and then the draw at Old Trafford is what sort of ends it. But that, from then, it's almost like in terms of our play. We look impenetrable, and in terms of the rub of the green, things are going our way and making other teams think, what is the point? Because they're going to get a pen in the last second, and you know, as we did against Leicester, all those sorts of things. And then I think that probably we then have things go more our way than we expect to, and we have to sort of manufacture our own peril towards the end of the season. And you know, we're kind of still in that mode where we talk a lot about the points gap, and you know how it will reduce. The points gap has gone. You know, it's a new season. We were all on
zero until Saturday.
We don't get to keep any of them points. But I think our attitude is still the team's attitude is maybe still not quite. It's definitely not where it was this time last season, I would say, and that is something which, if it isn't dealt with urgently, those four games that you've just rattled off sound terrifying to me. In just some of the play that we saw from all of our players that weren't acting in a very matter of fact way on Saturday.
I'll just come back to you on that last little thing though. We all came away from Norwich saying they could have got a couple more there, and they don't stick them in the back of the net.
Yeah, that's true.
We are against Southampton, they absolutely bladder us from 25 to 45. Even at the end of the game, we come out second half with the absolute business. Yeah. But then we put one on Danny Ings' toe and they miss a late chance. First half against Arsenal, which was the third game of last season, Nicolas Pepe has, and monkeys are still trying to count them, but I think 24 one-on-ones, there's teams of scientists working around the clock on it. You know, do you know what I mean? So I think
I know they are all difficult, and I think, you know, if I'm going to pick a game to get me out of any sort of malaise, it's Arsenal at home, usually. So having said that, you know, they were good. It's because they put up enough of a challenge usually. So I think that we do, you know, when you can name a list of four games and they all kind of sound hard, but when you're in them, it's not, it doesn't shape up like that, I suppose, is what I'm saying. But there's, I just think that...
Go on. No, I'm gonna say all of this adds to the thing I've been saying for a few weeks now, which if there's one game out of all 38 you gave me the guaranteed win on, it's the one next Sunday. Every single match, and I include City away, if you gave me one guaranteed win, and I'd almost like it to be as horrible as 1-0 or 2-1 as possible.
It's massive, and I think it's probably slightly been forgotten because we won and it was part of such an incredible run, but Stamford Bridge last season for me was massive in my mind because of how it tends to be a bit of a bellwether for the season, in a sense that
it's a horrible place to go.
It's a horrible place to go, and I think the last second Sturridge equaliser was massive in my head, even though we didn't manage to get a win, because that game generally is one that we would go there and get turned over 1-0, and it's him scoring again. It's all the things that happened in that game, and so the fact that we could get to even a place where we drew was big for that season, and winning there last season as we did, and the context of it, that, you know, don't forget they equalised and then it gets Vard off and then we go 2-0 instantly. It was such a huge moment in that season that, yeah, it's a horrific prospect. I'm just not sure we're there mentally, but there we go.
I kind of disagree, in as much as we wishful thinking, I'll accept that because I'm trying to be positive vibes, Ad, right? Is I think we need these kind of games where we just need to tune in a bit. I think focus game. Yeah, you don't want things to go against you early. I don't want to be chasing one of these games early doors, like to see two in the first five. But I actually think it'll help focus us a little bit. I'm quite content with that. I'm quietly optimistic. This is saying this before having watched Chelsea's new signings all gel seamlessly and win 5-0 tonight. Right before I record,
I do
that
agree.
By optimism.
I'd have then the other way around, though. I'd have Arsenal and then Chelsea. But it's Arsenal away as well.
No, Arsenal's at home.
Definitely.
I'm happy we're going to Stamford Bridge without fans there. Yeah. I'm happy that we're doing it earlier in the season. I think it's the right time. Without over previewing that game, it's the right time to be doing. Just going, if I can say one thing on the Leeds, well, I can say lots of things on the Leeds game, but if you look at it as a piece of work in its own right, and we'd add like 5-1-0s at the tail end of last season, right? And I know that's a big a recontextualization, but if that happened, in isolation, I'm very happy with that Leeds game. Very happy with the 3 points, because I think we really, really deserve them. I think the comparison with Norwich is really fair. Norwich, I think, gave us more problems without scoring than Leeds did.
Yes, I agree.
There were periods where they were... Klopp made an interesting comment afterwards. They said, do you think you defended badly? Because I think the goals were bad, I don't think we defended badly. And what he meant was, we didn't invite pressure on ourselves. We weren't under pressure. I mean, despite the surreal possession stats, we weren't under pressure. We dominated the game. It was weird at every... So, you know, the holding serve analogy, absolutely superb. It did feel like it was good. We were going to score. I was surprised there's actually so little time left when we finally won, because I was still hoping we'd win 6-2 or 6-3. Because I felt, it was in us to score at any one time. That was really good. I mean, there's far more pluses than minuses in isolation in that game, I would say.
You agree with that, Carl?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. I think there's also a case for... My preferred result of the Chelsea game would be Chelsea 0 and then whatever on top of that. Because I think if we get... I'd like Chelsea, the Leeds game, to be sort of sorted out by the team, as in, you know, the managerial team, to say, you've had your mad one. There you go. That's done now. Now we've got a week to go and work on this. But whatever happens, Chelsea 0, that's what we're going to be working on for the next week and sort it out. And I think, Rob, you hinted at, you know, is the midfield defence in front of the defence, is that the issue too for Beno not starting, for example? That might have helped as well. But just going back briefly again to that Chelsea game last season, what I can remember most about that, you were saying, Neil, about, you know, not today, you lads don't score today, we're on it. What I remember about the end of that game was the Chelsea fans applauded Chelsea off the pitch and they lost because they gave everything, but they didn't get anything from it at all. I know they got the Kante goal, but it's just a case of, look, lads, you tried everything. They just beat you.
There's big chances they have, a couple of big ones.
They did have some chances, yeah. But I remember thinking, that's a really nice way to win, where the opposition gets applauded off, but you're just not good enough.
We'll come back on to that just very quick on the numbers. Expected goals, Liverpool versus Leeds, 3.35 to 0.57, 3.35 to the Reds, 0.57 for Leeds. First game last season, Liverpool 1.77 and Norwich 1.00 on expected goals, which I think tells a little bit of a story about the two of those games. But it is worth talking, I think, a lot about the opening goal, Adam, the opening Leeds goal. That channel at the minute feels like a little bit of a weakness now. I think... you have to contextualise this by saying Joe Gomez, I thought, was terrific second half, to be quite honest with you. I thought he was really, really good second half. But we do feel vulnerable with all the phases of everything that happens in that first goal.
It's hard to say anything other than Joe Gomez was really, really poor. It just doesn't do anything. He doesn't do anything for that goal.
No.
And so I think that is the main issue. I think that there's the way they're trying to play, which worked, I think, a couple of times or once before they actually score, it's a combination of how high Trent plays, which is fine, and that makes that channel quite big, which means that it takes quite a long time for Gomez to cover if he needs to, but I don't know. It just looks really easy, to be honest, and it's not the sort of goal we tend to concede, and I just think it's difficult to say anything other than Gomez is poor and the keeper looks nowhere near it.
Can I just say I think there's a commonality on all the goals, Neil, without pushing ahead too quickly too soon, but in each case we're not set, and a long early ball that's from a man who isn't under pressure starts it. In each case, the first one's a ball down the line, the Bamford one's a long high ball, and there's a cross for the final one. And in each case, there's a big gap between the midfield and the defence. Because what we're doing, I think Leeds are prepared for this. They get it to a man, usually in a fairly wide position, who isn't going to get pressed, because it's not the area of the pitch we're tending to press. And our defence is caught in a bit of a sort of instinctive push-up moment, and our midfield, the gap is far too far ahead. I mean, you know, you can talk about individual defensive mistakes in these goals. Van Dijk will take stick, Gomez will take stick, the keeper. But in each case, there's just no shield at all in front of them. And I think it's because they go... I mean, it's like the old adage about offside, is you don't push up if the man on the ball is under no pressure ahead of you, because it's just going to be played in behind you from runners. Everyone, the third goal is the instructive one, as most instructive in my mind, is the midfield instinctively goes front foot when it should be looking to go forward, and creates this massive gap where Gomez is isolated against three runners, and that's why the goal happens. But I think there is a common thread between them all.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. And I think also it was interesting that Mané seemed to spend the first 60 minutes defending for me. He was very deep, and I wondered whether it seemed like he was doing some midfield pressing, because, I mean, I guess what tended to be the thing that I could hear people saying was, it doesn't look like the best idea to have started Keita instead of Fabinho here. It probably, you know, if you had your time again, maybe you'd have done them the other way around. And the third goal, you're right, Robert, is instructive, but it also is the one which is the one where I just thought we were playing really well. And I know you've got it in the agenda, Neil, but the sub, the time of Henderson coming off and then they score instantly, that felt like the biggest factor to me. And that it just felt like we'd been playing really well and the rest of the game's going to go a certain way. We're just going to make this sub. Oh, they've scored.
Klopp conceded that point, by the way.
Did he?
Yeah.
So that although it is instructive, the point you make, and I do see what you mean, because thinking about it, all the passes that were played by Leeds' various top-knotted defenders were very no pressure, weren't they, from similar areas of the pitch. But I just think that third goal, there's something else going on there. It's also a great goal, I think. I think that's probably their best goal. You know, it's really good strike, isn't it? Although it is, he takes it early and it is quite far out. So you'd say, I'd expect Alisson maybe to get a bit nearer it. I just think it's a goal.
I'm not sure about the third, Carl. The first, the goalkeeper doesn't cover himself in glory. I think Liverpool could do it being a little bit better set. And I think that the point about Gomez blocking off a certain angle of shot is sort of possibly what Alisson expects him to do.
He went very late for that ball in a sort of, you can sort of tell he thinks it's gone already, but you know, you never know because he's him. He might get something on it indeed.
Let's Gomez to be in the way instead of just being suddenly invisible.
Instead of ushering him through with rose petals on the floor in front of him. Yeah. I thought he just went a bit too late because he's expecting better of Gomez.
So, but he ends up in a bit of a funny position because he can't get down to it. And he's also quite advanced, Carl. That's the other thing as well for the keeper there. Because he's trying to cut a certain angle off, and it transpires he's in all sorts of bother the other side.
Yeah, it's just, I think it must be difficult because, you know, if you know that your centre halves are just that good and you see one tiny thing, I think your initial reaction will be as a keeper, not that I am one, to step forward and just sort of cut things down again. And then I think that's all it was. I didn't think he was expecting Gomez to be quite so bad as he was. And it
terrific early shot as well.
Yeah, I think it's a good finish. Definitely.
It's the tightrope we walked though a little bit, Rob. And the manager talks afterwards about, for instance, it's not just like picking it back up again. It's not just like riding a bike, playing at the back.
Yeah.
But I think that this is, again, to do Adam's vibes point, we've not felt like we're walking the tightrope particularly well for a while. And I think that a lot of what we do is tightrope stuff. You mentioned there about pressure on the ball, that's part of it. Then about just sort of winning that initial battle when it emerges for both Trent and for Gomez. Then Gomez positioning himself well enough. And then the keeper making quite a big call to block off an angle, which opens up another one. All of these things are big percentage decisions that we do. But the point is that if you get them a bit wrong and you get into the habit of getting them a bit wrong, it could be difficult to arrest.
Yeah, I mean, there's no kidding ourselves. Everything's absolutely right. I don't think anybody is. It feels to me as though we're a very good team which has three incredible components that any side in any sort of club in the world will go, we'll have Liverpool's midfield, quite frankly. We'll have Liverpool's defence, quite frankly. We'll have Liverpool's attack. The key in the most impressive phases of the last two seasons has been the harmony with which all those departments work. I think Klopp would say, you know, managers say it and fans think it's platitude, but we defend as a team, we attack as a team. It very much is what this Liverpool side is about. I felt at times when we're in full attacking fluency mode, it's because the front three are just on it. And we're sort of expecting the defence to defend very individually at the moment. So that's not right. I mean, at the beginning of this, I was proffering that set of statistics that shows that there's been a bit of a set-in of a cancer in terms of our defensive quality as a team. But it does have to be reiterated. It's been a very, very strange phase for our club. I go back as far as January because the league really was very much won. I think people pick their game. Like, was it the United game? I would say when we won at Spurs 1-0, I was then beyond certain in my own mind that league was won. And that's quite a long time ago. So we've been yeah, I think we've had conflicted agenda since then. How quickly they can reorientate them, I'm not sure. It may be that he thinks they have to change formation just to sort of almost recreate a myth. I do wonder if a double number six system, at least it may affect us, I don't know, our fluency going forward, but it could create sort of like a double closing of the back door kind of thing. I don't know. I feel something like that needs to come in.
The flip side of all of this, Rob, is the best player on the pitch. Mo Salah was just simply incredible. Two of the goals are penalties. Firstly, penalties need scoring, but it's not so much that. He is absolutely irrepressible in the game. For me, I think there's a bit of a wider point. You know, there's a lot of praise for Leeds United in the way in which they approach the game. They didn't have seem to make it easy for Liverpool to pass to the best player. The best player should not get on the ball all the time. And yet the best player was on the ball almost as much as any other Liverpool player. Liverpool just found him over and over and over again, not least because his movement was brilliant.
Yes. I'm going to quickly say, I think that you'll quickly get Leeds out of the way. The sort of post-match mantra that Leeds are going to take a lot of points off our opponent this season. I'm not sure they will. I'm not convinced they're not a pile of shit, but we'll see. Let's park them for a minute. Yes, Salah, all of the above. It would have been a relief just to have seen him be 50% of the Mo Salah we've come to love and score a goal, but to be sort of 110%, Brian, of the Mo Salah was a real treat. You know, it was the most. I mean, yes, two of them are penalties, but one of them he very much earns, in as much as if that clumsy fool doesn't put his arm up or have it in the unnatural position or whatever, it probably goes in. Do you know what I enjoyed? Aspects of Salah I enjoyed is, one, he seems to be being more creative at the moment, especially in that game. He's really that sort of selfish Salah, which had begun to irk a bit, was very much absent, even though he was still focused on getting his goals and looking to shoot. He also looked very unburdened. And I even think maybe from getting the early goal, but Salah's, you only realise when you watched his body language and his facial movements during the game, after the game, and you thought, this man has been playing under intense pressure for a long, long time. I'm going to go back almost to the tail end of his first season, where he was very focused on scoring every week, and there was actually a couple of games near the end where his selfishness was off the charts and beyond stuff Sturridge used to get criticised for. I mean, obviously, we'll always indulge that because he's a fantastic goal scorer. But I think he's played under an enormous amount of pressure and still produced goods. I wonder if something is a switch has flicked in his mind because he looked unburdened and the better for it, I thought.
He gets compared to when he first arrives, Adam, not least because he plays off the right and he's left footed. There's a lot of comparisons to Messi. Then I think people make a slightly more accurate one around Ronaldo. Being a Liverpool forward who's played for the last however many years, people talk about Suarez. When I watch his performance back against Leeds, he actually reminded me of, albeit flipped, Thierry Henry. In that, as Rob says, it wasn't just the idea of a single-minded determination that I am going to be the lad who sticks it in the back of the net, like Suarez or Ronaldo tend to have. You know, Messi's out on his own when he was at his very, very best going back a few years. But for me, it sort of reminded me of Thierry Henry, where he's a team player, he's unbelievably quick, he's very, very strong, but he's simultaneously able to score a hat-trick, if you know what I mean. And to me, it was almost a complete performance.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. I think before he arrived, having watched him a bit for Roma, I was saying he'll probably be a bit Sterlingish. He looks like a bit of a scruffy finisher, but he's really tactically switched on. He'll be in the right place at the right time a lot. And he was better than that. And I think he's got, in the same way as Henri, I think he's got gears that he's gone through, and as Rob said, the switch flicked in his mind. I think that I remember the first game after he was injured by Ramos in the final, he came back looking so focused, he looked angry, sort of angry at what had happened, and determined that he was gonna right that wrong, kind of thing. And I do think that he is that sort of player that motivates himself through various things. And I think this season, it looks like we might. It was incredibly exciting. And I know there's that many things to talk about from this match, and we've kind of done the teams and all those sorts of things. But the the Salah narrative is genuinely the most exciting thing about that game. And I think the biggest thing about that game, you know, if I was going to write a match review, you talk about all the other things, but you've got to say Salah looks like he is incredibly like razor sharp focus. He's got nice new hair, but there's something in his eyes as well. It's you know, it all goes together, and you think, yeah, this is it. This season, no matter what, you know, it's sort of because in his first season, it was like, you know, we might not be playing that well, but Salah is scoring every week, so we'll probably be fine. And we might be having another one of them.
Adam, just on the way in which he himself, one of the things that occurred to me thinking about the match afterwards was there's the long break, the long enforced COVID absence, and then there's the long, and then there's been the post-season period, which wasn't as long, but Salah's not gone anywhere.
No.
No one's made him do anything. He's not even had that sort of stress added to his life, I suspect. And I suspect it is quite stressful when he basically has to go and be an Egyptian king for a few weeks. And you get the impression that he finds it all a little bit frenetic. Maybe this is me imposing on him, but he just quite likes to sit in his and read a book. And he looked to me like it was, you know, as Rob says, there was something that was very, very relaxed with him. There was something very relaxed that was with him in the Blackpool game as well. I think there's a combination here where there needs to be a level of intensity, obviously, from him. But the flip side is if he can find that and sort of engage it with, you know, he's won everything he needs to win at this football club now. He might as well, part of, when you talk about him having his own motivation, part of his thing might as well, he may as well just be the best Mo Salah Liverpool could hope for.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it may suit him in some of these tricky away games and other games that we've got coming up. It may suit him particularly to be behind closed doors, because I think that he's occasionally felt a little bit of the pressure he gets from opposing fans and some of the poor treatment he gets from referees. I think behind closed doors might be in his and our favour for that. But yeah, I'm just really excited, basically, to see what happens this season. If he stays injury free, he looks a stick on for the golden boot to me.
Are you very excited, Carl?
I think he's going to get buckets. I really do, because I think a lot of this is to do with the fact that he didn't get the golden boot, which he's not used to. He didn't get the numbers he usually gets last season, and to start off with three, I think he's rubbing his hands.
Yeah, Dixie's still there, isn't he?
Yeah, he's still there, isn't he? Yeah,
Salah is fuming about Dixie Dean for me.
He goes down to the statue every Sunday and stares at it for an hour and then comes and walks home again.
Why, Dixie?
And yeah, to start off with three, but it's not just, I know people are going to say, yeah, penalties, but he was just fantastic with the whole thing. I mean, as you say, Neil, like, why give him the ball? Why do everything you can to give him the ball? And the second goal, what I really like about the second goal, because I saw the club's footage of it, and I like the fact that someone, I think it might be Henderson, shouts finish just as he hits it, but I don't think they're expecting that finish. Someone shouts finish there. Oh, God,
you know, his penalties remind me of, they're a fine line between when they're good, they're amazing, and when they go, and most of the time they go in and you end up going, fucking hell, when I see the replay, how did that go in? But it actually reminds me of those sort of games where kids are sort of like quasi-bullying each other when they're trying to kick a ball at each other's arse. So it's basically, I'm going to whack it at you as hard as I possibly can. You're going to want to get out of the way of this. And the keeper's going, oh, I've got out of the way.
Rob, I was going to say...
Always down the fucking well. Not always, but one in two is straight down the middle.
Well, I was going to say that one thing I was going to mention about Salah is that I think it's time for us to stop being worried about his penalties. And, you know, it's kiss of death probably, but there's so much... I think there's so much... so much variety in his penalties. I haven't actually seen any infographics with how many are going in each corner, but I can't predict where he's going to put them. And I think that, as you say, I'm enjoying the kind of, whatever the game's called, red arse aspect of it.
Steven Gerrard training session, isn't it? When a new player comes in, he just belted the ball as hard as he could.
So it's interesting that you mentioned Gerrard, because I think Gerrard went on a similar journey, but not in the same way, where I wasn't confident at all for a few years about scoring the pens. And then I am, you know, Milner levels of confident by the end of Gerrard's time with us. He was just never going to miss any. But his were always low in the corner, basically.
Yeah.
And except the one which he takes to get Hodgy the sack. Salah's are all over the place, and where that first one hits the net, you don't often see pens go there, do you?
No.
It was brilliant, to be fair, and I thought the Leeds goalie did quite well, to be fair. He had quite a good game, but yeah, Salah doesn't look like missing pens to me at the moment.
No.
Apart from the fact that Van Dijk headed the ball so hard it carried him into the net.
The commentator going, that's a shout for a goal, whether you're going to keep it in the net with the fucking ball.
Hugging the ball against the net.
The keeper's in the Anfield Road, I think, somehow.
I was thinking to Steve, people going, is that in? I was going, look, there's the keeper in the back of the net.
Carragher had to tell Tyler. Tyler's commentary for that one was along the lines of some sort of stoppage here.
I think he's given the goal. The players are celebrating, Martin.
We're very harshly done by the way, on the second Van Dijk one. If you look at it, there's no foul there, is there?
I couldn't see it.
Curtis, the lad runs over Curtis's foot, and in a rare lapse of astonishing form, Big Ols feels there was an infringement. But the other issue is he actually blows before Van Dijk puts it in. So that's an issue as well, Father, with reference to VAR. So I suspect if Van Dijk had just put it in, he'd then blown. He could have then gone and had a look and maybe gone, all right, that's innocuous. I shouldn't have given that. But when he blows, he somewhat sort of undermines the situation. But listen, you know, I thought Big Ols was magnificent with that one blemish apart. And we've talked about this being a big season for Mo Salah, but I think it could be an enormous one for Michael Oliver. And it could be time for him to go into the stratosphere, to be honest with you.
Can I just raise one VAR presentational issue?
Oh, by all means.
I know you love your VAR, Neil. But as I was watching, I was watching the other day. They're still on the TV, they're still showing the lines on the pitch, which I do like, because when you go, it's being challenged, you go, well, okay, let's see what the case was. But during our game, there was no lines drawn for us as spectators to get to.
Was the first one BT? What was the game where they drew the lines?
I don't fucking know, but maybe it was.
I think the first game was Peter, yeah.
Because it's decided now by the television network what they do on the show, and it's not decided by the VAR what does or doesn't get shown. So it might be that Sky have thought we're getting rid of these lines, and BT have thought the opposite, and it might be that somebody will let me know.
Yeah, Arsenal was on BT.
Yeah.
I have to say, the most frustrating thing about VAR is that, as a fan, your sense of is it being applied or not? But I'm a consequence, they'll have looked at that, you know, they'll have checked that, you know, and I'll go, how do we fucking know they'll have checked that? What, because they said they would? It's a terrible vacuum that we live in. I just would like that resolved. I'd like to go, didn't fucking check it, to come up with defo checked it sound. You know, anything. It's the information vacuum.
45 to 65, Carl, as I said before, we are absolutely ace, but we do need to make it count. And, you know, if we want to do the wider concerns point on this, when I look back over the fixtures that have been cited by Rob before, when we talk about, for instance, you know, goals that have been conceded, the flip side is always whether or not we put the hammer down and scared the opponents enough. So, for instance, we give up a fair few chances against Brighton. We only get one goal, but we should have just been out of sight. We're absolutely dominant for a period. Manchester City away, we're the better side and creating the better chances at 0-0 and at 1-0 down. Chelsea at home, we end up scoring 5, but it honestly felt, watching it, as though there was a period where Liverpool should have been 5-1 up, at which point Chelsea stopped trying. Yeah. You take me general point here, Carl. I want to see this Liverpool side start to pull away from sides a little bit more than it has been doing.
Well, it comes down to what Phil was saying, wasn't it? About, you know, we need to break serve. And I thought when it went to 2-1, I thought, that's
it wasn't Phil who said that, Carl. It was the Anfield Apps Twitter. It's very important to be clear.
Absolutely, Neil.
Yes.
The Anfield Rap Twitter was very, very clever when it said that, I thought. And I thought at 2-1, I thought, third goal, finish it. That's your lot. That it's all done. And that was the only frustrating thing. Again, I'll just go about something else. My brother-in-law has a historical 5-1 bet, which he does most weeks. And the only time I told him not to bother with that was when we beat Arsenal 5-1. If you remember, Aubameyang missed the ball while the ball was on the penalty spot, and he had an open goal that he missed, and I was the only person in any Liverpool end of the ground screaming at him. So I thought, you know, I was saying 5-1, this could be a 5-1 game. And when they got their goal, I thought, 340 quid, yeah, I'm all right, this is going to be okay. So when the second goal comes in, I think second goals sort of throw us a bit, to be honest.
Yeah.
We don't really, what you mean you're still in the game, but we've scored. You know, we're not used to that, although we are used to it now. But we really do need to start pulling away and putting games to bed. And, you know, the usual sort of 80s thing about just holding the ball, and they can't score if we've got the ball, that sort of thing. And we're doing less of that.
It's frustrating, Adam, I think. And I think that for all the praise of Salah, and I'll continue to praise Salah, I thought he was absolutely tremendous. But there is just that making it count thing. And it's almost too easy, I feel, in the periods in question. Like we're creating so many, or we feel like we're creating so many opportunities to have opportunities that we don't actually do anything. We almost feel like, well, this is never going to end and we're always going to be this dominant. And maybe that's me imposing something on them and that's not quite valid and all of that sort of stuff. But that's what I feel like I'm watching in that period, where we just feel like, you know, Gini Wijnaldum doesn't score, but it's all going to be all right because somebody will in a minute, and then somebody else misses and they smile wryly, and then somebody else gets a great chance, or we don't quite carve them open as we should and stick it in the back of the net, but that's all right. And then we nearly do it again and then we concede.
No, I'm with you, and I'm always pretty much, and it depends on what the score is. Obviously, I'm not insane, but I'm always quite annoyed if we don't score when we're on top, because I don't think, you know, momentum isn't infinite in football, and you do have to take your chances when they're there, because, like you say, I think that you quite quickly go from Rice Mile to one of those days that there's probably, you know, two chances missed in between a Rice Mile, well, it'll be all right in a minute, to it's one of those days. But that is all quite ephemeral, and I don't really know, you know, it's quite difficult to pin down what all that means, but there is definitely something to be said for, I don't know really, I'm not sure whether it's what player in particular it is, whether it's a bit of overconfidence, superconfident Firmino, maybe not quite making the chance that it should be, because it's, you know, it's just generally it's nice play. Well, the chance will be there in a minute. Not to say that Firmino wasn't good. I thought he was.
Great second half.
He was, and I think maybe it's the thing that it's missing is just some sort of typical Mané goal. It's probably him that maybe
it is a bit showboaty, Adam. I thought
he doesn't quite come to the party, I think. And the players that, so just to finish off, Rob, what I was going to say is, I think the players that played more matter of factly are the ones that played better on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the, we referenced at the beginning, the move where all the 1-2s, Mane's attempted finish of that move is absolutely ludicrous. He ballooned it over the bar.
It would have been a great goal.
Oh, and that's what was in his head. That was his main motivation in that moment. He was, which made me think there was a point to that game where I said to Steve, sitting next to me, I said, this is a very pre-season game, you know. We did, that's another contextualization we have to say here. It very felt like a first game of the season game, which can feel like a pre-season game. And I think that accounts for what I've perhaps harshly called showboating there. They're in a certain mode, which is, you know, instinctively they're not quite at the winning thing as opposed to getting it performance thing, if you know what I mean.
Curtis Jones and Fabinho, Rob, both grow into the game, I think, quite nicely. Yeah. I think Fabinho, again, and I think it's in part marked by the fact that Leeds scored in that period, but I think Fabinho, as a rocky sort of 10, where it's each a bit trying to get to the pace of it, and then he absolutely dictates the pace of it. Jones gets on the ball an awful lot as well. Again, takes about 5 minutes to work out exactly how this is working, and I was a bit, he's just running around a bit here, to be quite honest with you. And then all of a sudden, he was on the ball all the time. And I think that speaks volumes for both of them, and for the approach of Liverpool in terms of getting them in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought both played well. I thought Fabinho came on, and I thought he was, although you're right, he did take a little bit to warm up, but he was man on a mission. I think he would have been entirely surprised, but jolted by not starting, because a couple of his performances in pre-season were abject. And I think he was hauled off at half-time, wasn't he, against Blackpool? He was shite. So I think he earned the dropping, and I think he seemed to respond well. And to me, that's a big thing, to respond properly. Curtis, when you put a kid, and he still is in that category until he's played a lot more games, into that kind of game where there was not a lot of space, and Leeds' work rate was high right until the end. They're throwing bodies in front of everything. You saw a bit of Nico Williams in his last couple of games. You go, the pace of this is just a little bit too frenetic for you, and his touch would be wrong, or he'd misplace a pass or lose it. I know Curtis is more of a technical player than Nico Williams anyway, but I thought he was almost word perfect. Without doing anything spectacular, like without beating two men or making
By being, as Adam says, Rob, more matter of fact about the enterprise.
Yeah, he looked, you know what he looked like? If you just tuned into the Liverpool team from before, you'd assume he was a regular in that team. He just looked effortlessly part of the way it worked. And that was really quietly very, very impressive, I thought.
I thought Fabinho and Curtis Jones were a matter of fact when they came on, and that's what helped us get over the line. I just thought there was an initial wobble, not Curtis's fault, an initial wobble when he came on, and then they scored straight away. And there's definitely something there with Curtis Jones. It's interesting, I think, a young central midfielder doing the things that central midfielders do, which is not always obvious. And I think that there is something there where he is maybe not quite as, Duracell bunny kind of all energy as our all energy midfield can sometimes be. As Rob said, he's more technical. But it's really great to see him growing into a fixture with this team. And I'm not surprised that he is one of the first picks off the bench. I don't know whether you'd agree with that, but I think it's no longer like, oh, he's giving the young lad a chance.
It's Curtis now, isn't it? The lads coming off the bench.
I was about to say, though, Carl, it is interesting that we get on ahead of at that point, Jones. And I think there is something in the fact that we go 3-3 straight away, and the manager might actually immediately regret it. He does mention it afterwards, like Adam says. He might immediately think it's now a different game that he's in. But then I think that, Curtis doesn't let him down.
Yeah, he just got to the, straight away, okay, 3-3, we know what to do. We keep the ball, keep pushing at them. We don't make any silly mistakes at the back, which would have been a nice theory for the entire game, in fact. But he just trusts him immediately, which is a really nice thing to say. And you're right, you could have put Milner on. There's the romantic element of that.
Minamino
quite just as easily, yeah. And I just like the fact that he has jumped up. They made a big thing on Sky about the fact he's got a new shirt number, so that guarantees more games for some reason. I don't quite understand that. But I just like the came on. He just sort of took on board the fact that we'd gone from winning to drawing, and of course drawing is losing for Liverpool these days, and he'd just gone on with things. And to say he's a kid, I don't think he doesn't play like a kid. He just plays, okay, well, I know what the tone of this is going to be now for the rest of the game, and I can help it out.
The game he comes into, Neil, I think Carl's point is right. He's brought on into a game which is meant to have a lot of space in it for Liverpool, that he'd find himself in more space because Leeds would have been pushing on them and there'd be much more space on the counter. But he actually comes into a game which is really, really tight, and he has to work in very, very, very acute spaces and does brilliantly.
Adam?
Fabinho also, I think, a lot of the way the game ended with Leeds basically under siege, I think that a lot of that was the way Fabinho dictated the shape of the midfield and just turned it into a game where we signed up sort of almost in a V formation with him at the back of it, passing it around. And I thought it was the way he won the penalty was very matter of fact. It was the sensible thing to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I like that because it wasn't, it was a definite pen, but other players might not have reacted in that way. And, somebody might have tried to go on and score, is what I'm saying. But
Idiot might have shot.
Yeah, he did the sensible thing and fell over.
Yeah, it was a big mark in the don't shoot column, that one from Fabinho. Yeah. It was some of the best not shooting of its generation. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure today, Adam Melia, Rob Gutman and Carl Karpak. It's a week until Chelsea, but my God, it feels massive. I reckon the manager will be buzzing for the week. I think that we are as well. If you want to subscribe to the Anfield app, it's theanfieldapp.com/subscribe. But thanks again. Thanks to you for listening. But also Adam, Rob and Carl. We'll be back with more of this sort of thing for the weekend or later in the week. They'll be talking Reds on video all the way through, and there's all the subscription stuff as well. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.